Welcome to the Ethan Almighty Podcast. My name is Jeff. Most of you may know me as Ethan's adoptive dad. So thank you for joining. Thank you for listening. This is episode one. It's taken a lot to get to this point. I never really thought I would start a podcast. Never thought I would be on a podcast. And so honestly, the whole thing makes me a little uncomfortable, but I'm going to give it a shot. And some of these may not appeal to everyone. And if it's not something that you're interested in, skip right over it. Go to the next one. But I'm going to be speaking with several lawmakers in Frankfurt, asking questions about how bills get passed. More specifically, how and why it's difficult to get animal welfare bills passed. Ultimately, why HB 57 didn't pass. And more importantly, what can we do in the future to get a version of HB 57 into law? The other thing that I want to do is spread happiness and inspiration through Ethan's name. And so I'm hoping to speak with some people that have sent stories to me of how Ethan's journey has inspired them. And so through this podcast, I'd like to bring a voice to their story because some of those are incredible. And I believe they could be an inspiration to everyone else if they could hear them. So I'd like to bring those stories to this podcast also. And the other thing that I want to do is speak with some interesting, cool people, probably mostly with animal ties, that I think you guys will really enjoy hearing from, which brings me to the interview today. So I decided to start at the top, you know, go big or go home, and it may be all downhill from here. We'll see. But episode one, Dr. Emily Bewley joins me to talk about a wide range of interesting topics. If you're listening to this, and especially episode one, you love Ethan. And if you love Ethan, you probably want to know more about the people, especially the vet that oversaw his amazing recovery. So enough about me. Let's get right to it. Welcome to the Ethan Almighty Podcast. I'm happy to be joined by Dr. Emily Bewley of the Kentucky Humane Society. Emily, how are you?
I'm excellent. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me. So let's go back. We can talk about Ethan in just a little bit. Let's kind of go back to the beginning. How long have you wanted to be a veterinarian?
Ever since I could walk, I think. My first early memory is as a one-year-old walking underneath a Irish wolfhound that was huge, and I loved him, and he was our next-door neighbor. So I think I was five when I finally said that I wanted to be a vet, and then from that point, it was just forever. So forever.
So the longest you can remember, you want to be a vet, and you kept that dream up.
Yeah, I stopped for a little while in college. I figured out that it was going to be really hard to do, and I kind of wanted to have fun. So I stopped for a while and decided to be an occupational therapist. Didn't do that because it was terrible, and then decided I would be a microbiologist. So I got a master's in microbiology at U of L, and then that was really boring. It was actually my husband who said, why don't you just apply to vet school? And I was like, oh, I'll never get in. It's really hard and I'm not smart enough. And he said, you're smart enough. You can do it. Just go and apply. So I applied and I got in and we moved to Indiana and, I went to Purdue and got my degree there.
So 4 years of college and then how many 4 years of vet school?
Yeah, so I took a long route. So I did 5 years of undergraduate. And I got a bachelor's in biology. And then I did another few years for my master's in microbiology. And then another 4 years. So probably 11 years of college.
So you really liked school.
Is that what you're trying to tell me? I took the long route. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Did a lot of school. paid for a lot of school.
So you graduate from vet school and mm-hmm. you're ready to jump right in. Where do you go first?
So first I thought I wanted to go into ER. So I started at Jefferson Animal Hospital, and I had worked there as an assistant before I ever went to vet school. And I started there as a doctor, and it was fine, but it was a lot more pressure. Like, it was a lot more fun for me when I was an assistant, because I wasn't in charge and there wasn't as much pressure. Once I started as a doctor, I was like, oh crap, this things would walk in and I didn't know what to do, and it would be really stressful, and I just wasn't ready. I learned a whole lot that first year, a lot. But it was very stressful, long hours. So I did that for a year. And then I, after that, I stayed at the same place, but I worked GP. I had another baby, worked general practice at Jefferson for another 4 years. And then I was looking into working at Louisville Metro Animal Services. They had a vet job. And I was looking at either working for government or for a not-for-profit because of a federal student loan forgiveness program. So the first job I interviewed for was actually at Louisville Metro. And I was pregnant with my third baby at that time. And the timing just wasn't very good. But Karen Little, who is in charge of Alley Cats Advocates, I don't know if you know her, mm-hmm. She heard that I was looking, and she said, you know, I know of a really good job opening at Kentucky Humane Society. She said, this is many years ago, things were run a little bit differently. She said, I don't know if I'd want to work at Metro Animal Services right now, but I do know of Kentucky Humane Society. So I contacted them and interviewed, and so now I'll be here 5 years in August.
5 years, wow. Mm-hmm. So at KHS, there's a lot of things that come through the door. Do you enjoy like the wide range of cases that come through the door?
I love it. And it's really nice because it, so I do love emergency medicine. And now that I'm almost 10 years out of school, I'm a lot more confident and kind of know what I'm looking at more. So I love it when I get to kind of combine both emergency medicine and shelter medicine. And a lot of times, like just this morning, there's this picture on my way in. Some cat from Marion County has a bunch of kittens and a broken arm and a big wound. And I saw it, and I was going to tag somebody in it, but I was driving. And then when I got here, they were like, hey, Beulie, can you take this cat? And I was like, yeah, I already saw her. I want her. Bring her. So, yeah, I love it. I just really enjoy it. It was, like, honest to God, like a calling that I was born to do this, and I absolutely love to do it.
Which kind of leads me to my next question. Have you ever said no when they call, these other places call? Like, has there ever been a time that you said?
Yeah, I do. No, I mean, there are some times when, like, just even from the pictures, you can tell I can't fix that. I don't know anybody that can fix that, and that animal is suffering, and I don't think it's a good idea. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times. And even, you know, I still work ER now, and there are times when there's just nothing you can do. And sometimes the best thing is to say goodbye because, right, you know, they're suffering and you see it. So.
Right. So us talking before, I've heard you talk before about, you know, that every life matters and that every life deserves a second chance. You would hope or think that all vets or shelters would think that way. But what does it mean to you that KHS gives you the ability to take on some of those hard cases?
I'm just thrilled that they support me and believe in me enough. And everybody's always been so wonderful here and kind, and yeah, if you want that, yeah, absolutely, go, you know, go take it, go take this course to learn how to do this surgery, or you know, if you think you can fix this, then go for it. So I think it's just kind of a blessing that everyone has always been just easy to get along with. I know I've heard a lot of shelter vets say, you know, they have trouble with their director, or they have trouble with people, you know, that are higher up in the organization. And I think that they really struggle with their job. But everyone here has been just always behind me 100%, which is means everything and is always really helpful. And I mean, I think that's for everybody. When you have people cheering you on, then you can do a whole lot.
Right. I think it's very nice that they support not just like vet services. They support every, you know, every department here at KHS that way. Mm-hmm. Which sort of brings us to a hard case, another hard case, Ethan. So probably most people have heard Ethan's story, some in interviews with you, some in interviews with me. But some of the things that aren't there out there as much are kind of the behind the scenes kind of vet services things, like triage things, like when he first came in. Mm-hmm. So you're in vet services having lunch. Someone carries Ethan in. Mm-hmm. What are your first thoughts?
My first thought was, ooh, an emergency. they came in and they laid him down on the floor. So I got up and looked at him, because initially I just thought, oh, they just brought in a dead dog. But then we saw him breathe. So I said, okay, let's pick him up, put him on the table. We've got a lot of work to do. And then, you know, everybody that I work with, like all the technicians, are just excellent at what they do, and we work really well together. So immediately they all knew, started shaving for IV catheters, getting the temperature, getting the fluid bags ready, getting the warming stuff ready. I mean, it just everybody works really well together. So it's just kind of a little dance we do when an emergency walks in. We know what to do. We all have our places, and we all did that and got to work.
So he comes in. He's dirty. Mm-hmm. Very malnourished, dehydrated, emaciated. And one strange thing that I've always thought was he was covered in like Dawn liquid, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I didn't know that until once we had already like gotten all the IV catheters and everything in, and he was just lying on the floor, you know, getting warm. We decided to start kind of cleaning his paws, because he was just covered. I mean, it just feces and urine. I mean, you could just touch him and it was tacky and it was gross. So we were like, well, at least we'll just dip his feet into like a thing of water just to get him cleaned off. So once we started doing that, it was just water that we had, but there were bubbles and suds coming up, and you know the smell of Dawn dish soap. So we realized somebody had tried at some point to clean him, and I think realized, you know, we're way in over our heads, and then abandoned it, because it was kind of all over his stomach and mm-hmm. chest area. Yeah. Hmm.
So he does okay, still breathing, temperature starts to get up. He goes home with Jackie. Jackie ends up having to rush him to the emergency room mm-hmm. that night. Mm-hmm. You come in Saturday, get some special fluids. I think you called around to get some special fluids that he needed.
Yeah, so when he was home with Jackie that night, he started to have some neurologic symptoms. And she called me and she said, Beulie, what do I do? He's kind of starting to shake. It's, you know, he's not being normal. He won't eat anymore. So I said, take him in. So they took him to where I work, ER. And I called them the next morning, and they told me, you know, what his electrolytes were, and they said we need these fluids without any sodium in it. His sodium was too high, so this place didn't, the hospital where he was didn't have them. So I said, okay, I'll call around and figure it out. So I called several different vets, and I found one vet hospital that had some, and I also called Supplies Overseas, which we often get some supplies for them. They donate them. So Blue Pearl had the fluids we needed, so I drove over to Blue Pearl, picked up the fluids, and then drove to the ER and went to see him and drop off the fluids, and he really looked bad that morning. So this was Saturday morning. And I went to visit him, and he looked way different than he had Friday. So Friday, at least, he was kind of sitting up sternal and you know, could kind of eat a little bit on his own. Saturday morning, he was just lying on his side in a kennel, and he was just kind of doing these like jerky movements. And they told me that he wasn't eating, he wasn't drinking, and then it didn't look good. And so I was, you know, really disappointed because I was really hopeful that he was going to be okay. So I kind of get in the cage with him, so he's lying on his side. So I sort of squat on top of him and pick him up so that he's sitting, you know, sternal on his chest. And there was a bowl of water in there with him. So I pulled the bowl of water under his face and kind of held his face up, and he started to lick. So I was really excited. So one of the other doctors was there with me, and he said, "Do you want me to go get some food?" And I said, yeah, go get canned food. And he rolled it into a couple little balls, and I held it in my hand right under his face, like right under his mouth, so that he could easily, you know, wouldn't have to do anything to eat. And he opened his mouth and ate. So I was getting him to eat and drink. So I grabbed the treatment nurse, and I said, come here. I want you to watch how I'm doing this. So I showed her how I was holding him up and how I was feeding him. And she said, okay, yeah, I can do that. So from that point, once he got the good fluids, and once he, you know, could eat and drink again on his own, that's when he started slowly making those improvements day by day.
Right. Earlier though, before that, on that Saturday, you know, you've kind of told me in the past that it was the first time you maybe thought in your mind, are we doing the right thing?
Oh, yeah.
So how hard is that decision weigh on you, not just with Ethan, but with any of the other animals that come to your care? How much does, I know it's a tough decision, but how much does that really weigh on you about where do we draw the line here?
With him, it was a little harder because, I mean, you know, he was suffering. And, you know, he was jerky and shaking. And I just thought, you know, initially on Friday, he wasn't. And then on Saturday morning when I saw him, I was like, man, this is cruel. I don't want to put him through this. And I think when they told me he wasn't eating and drinking, I had kind of made up my mind that this isn't the right thing to do. We should let him go. But then once I got him to eat and drink, that gave me a little spark of hope where I thought, okay, maybe he can get through this. So I think it's just a decision you make on each individual case. He was especially difficult just because of, you know, I mean, he just looked, it was awful. I mean, it was awful. He looked terrible. He was obviously suffering. You just wanted to help him so bad. You know, sometimes it's easier than others. Sometimes you never know if you make the right decision or not. But you just are human. You do the best you can.
Right. Well, those kind of parts of the story are the ones that, to me, make you so special and set you apart, because you went to get fluids, called around on your own, get fluids. You come in, he's not doing well. You on your own, you figure out a way that he can eat. Otherwise, he can't eat. If you don't figure that out, he may lay there and not make it. So, I mean, you just go the extra step, and I just think that's amazing.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I'm thrilled he made it. I remember telling somebody, I've never wanted a patient to survive so bad in my whole life, because everybody was rooting for him, and you know, so many people were behind him and supporting him, and I just wanted him to live so bad, and I'm so glad that we kept going.
Right. Well, me too. I'm glad you kept going. So, you know, pre-Ethan, before Ethan, we were friends. I had as much respect as I could have for you, because I would come in there to do work, and you guys would be doing something crazy every week, you know, to help an animal out, to save an animal. And, you know, since Ethan, you know, I've gotten to know you a lot better. I consider you a really good friend now. And I've seen even more crazy cases come through.
Yeah.
I mean, so tell me about like some of the most recent ones, like Debonair and Slash. How are those?
They're good. Slash is adopted. He had that a big scar above his eye. And I saw him. I saw a picture of him on Facebook too, and I did the same thing. I said, "Oh, I want that. I want that." So I saw that his upper eyelid could be fixed because I could see the edges of it and I could see what I needed to do. So I just wanted it. So, he's doing great. Debonair is another one. He actually came into the ER when I was working as a euthanasia. Somebody had found him as a stray, and they just brought him in. And, you know, we do Good Samaritan euthanasias when there's an animal that's suffering. And, you know, it's just something that a vet does because it's what you do. So he came in. He looked awful. And I got him out, and he was real, real sweet and friendly, of course. And he just looked terrible. And I thought, well, I'll give him a bowl of food and see. And I gave him a bowl of food, and this cat devoured the food. He was hungry. And I thought, I mean, you know, I can fix those eyes. And and he's hungry. He wants to, he's got some fight in him. So so I had him signed over and took him in. He's doing really well. He's still got a bit of an upper respiratory infection, but he does have adopters that want him. So they're on vacation right now. But when they get back, they're going to pick him up. And he's got feline leukemia virus, so he won't live a super long life, but the life that he will live, he will be fed and comfortable and warm and as happy as he can be.
That's fabulous. There was even, I can't remember this dog's name. And there are some things, you know, at KHS that sometimes don't get social media for different reasons, sometimes legal reasons, sometimes other reasons. But there was also a dog that was shot in the face mm-hmm. that came in and had to have surgery. And that was, I saw some of those pictures. That was, wild.
And she's doing really well. So that was another ER case that people brought in. She'd been shot in the face and they didn't have a lot of money. And they had put her on antibiotics, but it just kind of wasn't enough. So they'd brought her back to euthanizer. And one of the doctors that works there called me and said, "Hey, we have this dog shot in the face. And do you think you could help?"
And Dr. Bealey's not going to say no.
So we got her, and she was just miserable, infected. Like, she smelled infected. Her little face was just so swollen. So we got her and put her under anesthesia, and I was able – so she'd been shot through her her nose, the top of her nose, through the side of her upper jaw, through her tongue, then down her neck, and then it also went through her arm just because of the way that she was standing and looking up at the person that shot her. So that was kind of the trajectory of it. And so when I got her asleep, I was able to fix her tongue and I was able to fix her neck. But she had this giant hole in her hard palate up top. So I fixed as much as I could, put her on antibiotics and said, you know, we'll see what we can do for her. And she healed great. We had to go, we had to take her to a specialist because the big hole in her hard palate is something far beyond what I'm capable of doing. But there's a dentist in the area that's helping her out. And he pulled a bunch of teeth and then closed her palate. So she's still healing. But she's a sweetheart. And once her swelling went down, she's just, you know, she's a lovely, lovely girl. And we kind of fell in love with her in vet services.
Yeah, she's sweet.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I do like all the, you know, I just, this is a, I think there's a lot of vets that go into it and want to do stuff like this, but then you get so caught up in your practice or the money with all the owners and, you know, people getting angry with you for not caring for something the way that they think you should. And there's a lot of vets that get really suicidal and, you know, it's becoming a problem. And I just kind of slipped into this like position where I feel like it's kind of a diamond in the rough. Like, shelter medicine isn't always thought of as, you know, something you really want to go into because shelter med doctors are sort of looked down on, you know, because it's just shelter medicine. It's just, you know, homeless animals. It's not good medicine, you know. But I love it. It's really doing what I, as a little girl, made drawings of me doing with long blonde hair and my little, you know, I remember drawing these things. It's doing what I really want to do, and you don't really have to worry about the necessarily the people behind the animal. You just fix the animal and do the medicine.
You did.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Tell me about your dog Lego. How did he change or affect the way you treat and approach animals?
So Lego, he's four now. So he came in probably 8 months into when I was here, and I wasn't as a doctor before. I wasn't a very confident doctor. I wasn't a very confident surgeon. And I struggled a whole lot. And once I got this job, I started to get a lot more confident and try more things that I never thought I'd be capable of doing. And Lego came in. He was a four-month-old puppy. And I could tell that he was breathing abnormally. Just this weird breathing they do with their stomach and their chest. And it looked like he was breathing like he had a diaphragmatic hernia, which is this hole in the diaphragm that separates the abdomen from the chest. And I thought that's what was going on. And we took an x-ray, and it was. And I thought, well, this dog's going to die. He was like 10 pounds. The siblings that he came in with were 20. He was the scrawny looking, just... I mean, he was sick puppy. So we took the x-ray, and I said, well, I mean, I can try it. I've never done it before, but, you know, if I don't do it, we just have to put him down. So what, you know, why not try? So we get him under anesthesia, and I open him up, and this hole in the diaphragm was enormous, like this huge hole. And his liver had flipped up into his chest. And part of his intestines were in his chest, and his omentum, like all this stuff. So I'm trying to pull. So I'm in his belly, and I'm trying to pull all this stuff out of his chest. And his heart's beating, and I've got his heart like in my hand, and I'm thinking, what? I'm way over my head. Don't know what I'm doing. So end up pulling all this stuff out of his chest and get it in the right spot, and then I close up the diaphragm like. You know, like you're supposed to, I guess. And so his heart stops, and then all the technicians are getting me epinephrine and stuff, and we get his heart back. His heart stopped three separate times on the table. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm over my head. He's like this dying puppy. I feel terrible that I've put this poor animal through this. And I close him up, and his heart keeps beating. You know, my tech Angela's holding him, and I'm like, there's no way this dog is going to survive this. I feel so terrible. I should just euthanize him. This is awful. And she's like, he's going to be okay. It's like, no, he's going to die. I know he's going to die. This is awful. She's like, give him a chance, Billy. Give him a chance. So she took him home for a few days, and then I'd take him home for a few days. He was just this adorable shepherd puppy, you know, and he started getting better. He started gaining weight, and he started playing, and, you know, my kids fell in love. My husband fell in love. There's no way I would ever want, like, a shepherd Malinois mix ever, but that's what we've got. He's amazing, and we adopted him. I think he was probably 6 months old by the time we officially adopted him, and he's strong as an ox, and he's an amazing animal that loves me, and I love him.
I love that story.
Yeah,
I've heard most of that before, I think, but I love that story because it's just another example of giving him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You know, a decision of, you know, humane euthanasia or a chance, because if the chance doesn't work, it's the same outcome. So yeah. Give him a chance, and that's all he needed. He was strong enough that he could recover on his. I love that story. So tell me a little bit about, you mentioned Angela. Tell me a little bit about all the vet techs you work with and what they mean to you.
Oh, I have the best texts ever. We're very good friends. I love them all. Angela's kind of the mom kind of lady. She tells us what to do, and we do it. And she is very efficient, and she's one of the hardest workers I've ever known. So she's one of the techs. She's been with me the longest. Jackie's another technician. She followed me from Jefferson Animal Hospital. We used to work together. And then when I started here, she came a few months later. And I call her my work wife because we've been together since I was a very young vet. And she knows what I'm thinking before I am thinking it. And she gives me advice, and I really appreciate all of her. Dakota came on. He's the one that named Ethan.
Mm-hmm.
He came on a couple years ago as an assistant, and he is just phenomenal at what he does, and he's hilarious, and he makes me laugh every day. And then Rebecca came from the Netherlands a little while ago, and she got married and was volunteering with us. And she has this amazing photography talent, and she wanted to be a wildlife photographer for a while. So now we utilize her to document everything. And that's why we all have such great pictures of Ethan. And she's fabulous as well. So I'm just super, super lucky to work with the team that I work with. They're all very kind, generous, loving people. They all speak dog, which is very important to me to work with people who speak dog, because they can look at a dog and know, well, let's give that one a minute, or let's give that one a couple of days, or, you know. So I appreciate them all incredibly.
Yeah, I do as well. I can't think any more highly of all of those folks. And thank you for letting me, you know, drag you away for a few minutes. I respect and admire you so much. Your passion, your compassion for animals, for people. I couldn't love you any more than I do.
Oh,
I love everything that you do. And you mean the world to me and Ethan. So please keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thanks.
I hope you keep doing it at KHS, but follow your passion wherever that takes you. And thank you so much for joining me. There's nothing I wouldn't do for you, not even come over and get a cat out of your...
Yeah, you save lives too, Jeff. Yep.
Behind the fireplace.
Behind the fireplace, yes. And those kittens are doing very well. Thank you for coming to my rescue.
No problem. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks once again to Dr. Emily Bewley for joining me. I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. I'm so lucky to be able to work alongside so many amazing, passionate, fantastic people and do it at such a wonderful place as the Kentucky Humane Society. Stay tuned. I'm hoping to have another episode edited soon. Please follow Ethan's continued journey on Facebook and Instagram at Ethan Almighty. I'll let you know when the next one is up. And please do something kind for someone today.